So listen, your toilet is massively gross. Like, it's grosser than you think. In fact, bacteria and viruses can hang around in the toilet bowl even after multiple flushes. And I recently found the easiest way to clean my toilet. Blue Land Sustainable Toilet Cleaner Tablets. Just drop, watch it fizz, brush, and flush. It is truly that simple. No more scrubbing for hours. Plus, the tablets are plastic-free. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet with the same powerful clean that you're used to. Blue Land products are effective and affordable, and their toilet tablets are proven to work on a wide range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, lime scale, and hard water. And you can even get more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
Hello and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John, Thanksgiving was fairly recent. If you thought your turkey was expensive, well, just wait till you find out that Elon Musk paid $44 billion for his.
I just appreciate the fact.
I tweeted that and then I deleted it 44 seconds later.
That is the best feeling. It's the only way to use Twitter in 2022 is to share.
Yeah, just
share
for the
thought.
People with notifications on.
Right, exactly. It's only for the 1,000 people who look down at their phone in that moment.
Yeah,
Hank, I really appreciate that you front-loaded some Twitter content, because lately I've been concerned that the 3 or 4 minutes of the podcast we spend before you mention Twitter are 3 or 4 minutes where you're not really engaged because you're waiting for the topic du jour.
I can't look at Twitter while we're doing the podcast ever again, or at least not right now, because I put an app on my computer that doesn't let me look at Twitter ever.
I'm so proud of you. As somebody who made not being on Twitter their entire personality for 2.5 years, I'm really excited for it to be your entire personality for the next 2.5 years. That said, we're talking a big game about how Hank's not on Twitter, yada, 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 but I can't help but notice that as we're recording this, Hank did tweet 1 hour ago. So
what did I tweet? I don't remember.
It hasn't been that long.
Oh, it was like a customer support thing for the Awesome Socks Club.
Okay. I think it's great.
It was part of my job. There are still things that I must tweet.
Yes. Well, and maybe that's the way that it's going to be moving forward. Maybe someone will tweet on our behalves, or like, who knows? The point is that I'm really excited for your personality to become, I'm actually not on Twitter.
Well, I just want to be, I want to be less on Twitter. I got a lot of, here's what somebody recently said to me. Do you think it's a slam dunk? Because you got a lot of things that you demands for your time. You got to run a couple companies. You got to sell socks. You got a lot of
sell
opportunities.
Coffee. Don't forget selling coffee. We're actually not selling socks right now, but we are selling coffee at awesomecoffeeclub.com.
It's so good.
It's good coffee.
My father-in-law has it. And so it has caffeine in it, so I don't brew it at home. We don't have decaf yet. We're working on it. It's surprisingly complicated to make decaf. But I was over at my in-law's house, and he has a subscription, and I just had a half a cup. That was, oh my gosh, it's really good coffee.
I know.
It tastes so good.
It's the best.
It makes me very happy.
It's such good coffee.
Yeah.
I know. It's really special. Hello, everybody who kept just hitting the fast forward 30-second button until John and Hank were done talking about Twitter. Today, we'd like to answer some questions from our listeners.
There are so many good ones, and I've got some amazing answers for you.
Let's begin with this question from Chloe, who writes, Dear John and Hank, if people who are under 18 years old are called minors, why aren't people who are over 18 years old called majors? Descended from Ryan's, Chloe? P.S. Don't worry about pronouncing the accent, John. Oh, all right. We'll just say Chloe then.
It's really good. You got to love somebody who really anticipates the needs.
Yeah.
so, John, do you know why why people over the age of 18 are not called majors?
Because they're called adults.
They are called majors.
Oh.
It would be perfectly accurate to call them majors.
Whoa.
And in fact, the 18 in America is, quote, the age of majority.
Oh,
that's what
yes.
they call that.
That's when you become a major. The majorization of a human is on your 18th birthday. So
do you want to
means...
go deeper into why, or do you just want to guess? Because I know why.
I don't want to go deeper into why, but I do want to just briefly say that this means that there's a character in Catch-22 who's, of course, a major in the Army or the Air Force, mm-hmm. whatever it is, in Catch-22, one of the great American World War II novels. And the major's name, his surname is Major, and then his first name is Major because his father, who was a major in the Air Force, wanted to name him Major Major, and then he became a major, so he's Major Major Major. But it turns out that he's actually Major 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 Major, which mm-hmm. is phenomenal.
Because he's over 18.
Exactly.
That's great news. This episode is titled Major, 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 Major. Almost certainly. It's already happened. We've hit the title. You can turn it off now. So these are this. It's the same word with two different definitions, and they have the same root source, which is Latin or whatever or something.
Yeah.
And then they became two different words and then they ended up with two different, you know, definitions. And the reason why is because like in ancient times, I'm not going to get super specific because I forgot all the stuff that I read.
Okay.
But maybe in ancient Greece or Rome, it would be like, you'd put major on the end if you were the father of the person who had the same name as you. Who was
oh.
the minor. So it was like the lesser or the smaller.
Yeah. Right.
Like literally
right.
like this yeah. is, you know, Julius the smaller. So you'd be like Julius Minor would be your name. And oh. And that became like the childhood name. And then as you got older and you had a kid and your dad was dead or whatever, you'd be the major and they'd be the minor. And that just eventually came to mean adult and child.
Oh, so it was almost like you could journey from being a junior to a senior.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And we all like we have a family member whose name is Little Mike,
Mike.
Because he was the littler of the Mikes. But yeah. Little Mike isn't Little Mike anymore.
Oh, he's 52 years old.
I don't think we call him Little Mike anymore.
No, but I still think of him. I kind of think of him as Little Mike sometimes.
Yeah. When I see him, that's the sort of the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
I shouldn't call him that, but still. In
yeah. Him. Great guy.
He is great. I love Will Mike. This next question comes from Caroline, who asks, this question was inspired by a recent YouTube short of Hank about Marie Curie's notebooks. Dear Hank and John, how do regular items, when irradiated, become radioactive? Can you wash the radioactivity back out of a previously safe object, or is it part of the atoms now? I understand the basics of like atoms decaying and letting off radiation, but something like a piece of clothing isn't made of anything... I'll explain it. It's not made of anything inherently dangerous, so how can radiation begin emanating from it after it is exposed? Pumpkins and penguins, Caroline.
Okay, so
there's
I don't understand.
There's a bunch of different things here.
Yeah, the first thing I need to know, and I have wanted to know this for a long time, so I'm excited, is
yep.
what exactly is radioactivity?
So radiation
yeah.
is any energy that is emanating from a substance.
Okay.
And that is a problem because we are currently, in that sense, radioactive. Like radiation is emanating from us. It's in the it's photons in the infrared wavelength. And so in that sense, are we radioactive? No. So there are basically two kinds of radiation. There's the kind that's made of photons, and so it has no mass, but it has energy. And then there's the kind that's made of particles that do have mass and energy. And photon radiation can be dangerous if it's high energy enough, whereas radiation that is made of particles, because it has mass is going very fast, is more dangerous. So there's two different kinds of things. We use the same word for them, and I don't like that, but there we are.
Okay, so I want to repeat back to you what you said to make sure that I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Radiation is just like energy coming out of anything. But the radiation that we worry about has mass, and then somehow it like penetrates your skin.
Well, look, both can be bad. One though is always bad, and one is oftentimes just like the color green. So you don't have to worry too much about it, unless it's like up in the X-rays when it starts to become ionizing, where it can actually have enough energy to change something chemically. But these particles of radiation, they're actually like, you know, neutrons or helium nuclei or something like that, which is just, you know, it's another scale of thing. But when something is irradiated, that doesn't mean that it's turned into something radioactive. So you can like shine ultraviolet light at something, that's going to kill all the bacteria, but it didn't turn that substance radioactive. What is happening with Marie Curie's clothes and notebooks is that there was a bunch of radioactive stuff around, and those radioactive atoms are now in those things. They're just like the way that dust gets on stuff. So there's just atoms of the stuff she was studying that is on those things. So that hasn't been—
And it's hard to clean off.
Yeah, it could be cleaned, but you would destroy it in the process, which you don't want to do because it's her notebooks and it's historical.
Right.
And also, like, whatever you cleaned it off with would then become radioactive waste as well, probably a higher volume of it. You'd have to dilute it a lot before it wasn't dangerous. So it's probably better to keep it all in one place anyway.
Okay, interesting.
But there is another thing that can happen where if you hit something with a high energy neutron, you can actually change it atomically and make the existing thing into a radioactive element. You can like add a neutron to it, and that's going to like make the nucleus unstable, and that will cause it to decay and then emit some radiation. So that's what we are talking about when we call something radioactive. It's that the nucleus of the atom itself is unstable and will decay and emit radiation of various kinds, whereas something that emits electromagnetic radiation in the infrared, like, we don't call that radioactive, even though it's emitting radiation. So those are like the three different things. There's like irradiation, which can like, you know, have damaging radiation or not, and does not cause something to become radioactive. There's being contaminated with radioactive nuclei of various sorts because you're around them. And then there's actually creating radioactive nuclei through, you know, the emission of high energy neutrons or something like that.
Okay. I'm just going to try to avoid all of it and remain as stable as I can for as long as I can.
Well, you can't avoid being hit with radiation because you would otherwise freeze.
Okay. Cool. Thanks for that. That's not helpful. Lots of things are true, but not helpful.
There's a really weird experiment that you can do because the Earth is constantly radiating a little bit of infrared light, and this is happening from your walls. And so those things are keeping you warmer. If you go outside on a clear, cloudless night and you look up, your face, the top of your face will feel colder than the rest of your body because there's no infrared radiation coming from above. And if you put an umbrella over you, you will feel like it feels like there's cold radiating from space onto you. And if you put an umbrella over you, it will feel like you're stopping the cold from hitting you. But what is in fact happening is the umbrella will be radiating some, because it has warmth, will be radiating some infrared radiation down toward you, then, and it's noticeably warming your face.
Wow. So if you're ever suffering from hypothermia and you have no clothes, but you do have an umbrella, use it.
It will help a very little amount.
It'll buy you like 4 seconds. This next question comes from Natalia, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, why is the skin on our body different depending on where it is? Like, why is lip skin so different from face skin?" That's a great question, Natalia, and I have no idea.
Like, it's why a science day here on Dear Hank and John. You're making work hard.
After this is the last science question. I'm just announcing it right now. We're moving on to hard humanities after this. I'm going to ask Hank questions about religion.
Oh, I'm going to do great on that. And
I know.
I'm going to say, I don't know. I know nothing. John, please help.
No, I'm really grateful to have these science questions because just a little peek behind the curtain. It's week two of our 3 week experiment, and John is mostly the Ed McMahon of this podcast because there are certain events happening inside of his television that demand a percentage of his attention.
Well, here's another one, John. So there's two ways for me to answer this question. There's what like physically makes the skin different.
Yeah.
And then there's like, why is it different? Like, how does the body construct itself in this way?
Yeah.
The first one is like, we know the anatomy really clearly of like, you know, palm skin is thicker. It has more fatty and connective tissue. It has like that padding.
Mm-hmm.
Underarm skin has like a certain structure with like a higher density of sweat glands.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got like lip skin, which maybe is full of blood vessels for signaling to other people that like this is lips and you have to like read lips and so you want to be able to see them more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
There's also like maybe a sexual selection thing going on there. And then there's like skin that grows different lengths and amounts of hair.
Mm-hmm.
And we know, we like have all this stuff pretty cataloged. We know about it. As for how the body decides to build itself, we have some basic understanding of how that works. But it's quite complex, and we are still in the process of figuring that all out. But basically, like, lip skin is able to be different from face skin, and your butt skin is able to be different from your foot skin because of the same reason that your nose is your nose and your toenails are your toenails and you don't grow hair inside of your liver. Like, your body knows, like, has systems for planning the body.
Well,
and those
I don't
are
like
complicated to, systems.
Yeah.
And you can research Hox genes, H-O-X, if you want to learn more about it. But we are on the path to understanding this, and we are certainly, I don't think, the majority of the way down the path.
I don't like to criticize the body because I think in general it does a fairly good job. Like, literally nothing has ever created or sustained consciousness except for biology. So it's a little hard, I think, to be
I can't be too
negative about biology. I think you need to remember, like, you know, I mean, biology with essentially a limited number of tools figured out a way to go from really boring bacteria to really interesting humans. So I don't like to be critical of biology. That said, whatever is going on with lip skin, it is a catastrophe. Like, it's so obviously a disaster. And it's amazing to me that people can be like, oh, we are in our like final completed form. How can that be if I need to apply chapstick to my lips 700 times a day? Like, how can this be like a perfect, glorious clockworks if it needs constant moisturization?
Yeah, it's I think it's tricky to build these sort of transition zones from inside to outside.
You know what, Hank, I don't want you to tell me all the reasons why biology had a hard time making my lip skin not suck. I just want you to say the truth, which is that biology could have and should have done better.
Well, but this is what I was going to say. It seems like there are lots of animals who don't have this problem. And I think that maybe it was our own doing that we selected this trait of having thin, you know, more colorful lips, either because it was helpful for communication to be able to read lips or because we just thought they looked good.
Mm-hmm.
And so we selected mates with worse lips, like functionally worse lips.
Oh, so you're saying that we're to blame?
Yeah.
Like, you're not blaming, you say biology isn't the problem. Dumb humans thinking that useless things are beautiful is the problem. And now—
Yeah, well, and this isn't even a human thing either. This happens all the time where you, like sexual selection ends up creating just ridiculously useless, actually detrimental traits.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Like the male peacock being the prime example.
That's a ridiculous thing, yeah.
They're ridiculous. They're lovely, but ridiculous. I think this is great, and I appreciate it very much. And I also think it's a great transition away from science toward the humanities, because now we're talking about the strange choices humans make and how we find meaning together, which brings me, Hank, to this question from Anonymous, who writes, Dear John and Hank, in episode 227, John brought up Rhett and Link's deconstruction episodes about religion, and John mentioned that Hank is on a journey of meaning. Can you expand upon that? Can you, Hank, expand upon that?
You mentioned that I was in a journey on a journey of meaning. That sounds like it's for you.
No.
It sounds like it's for you to figure out.
I more think that it's more for you to acknowledge and explore.
I don't know what you meant.
Your journey of meaning. Okay, here's what I meant.
What did you mean? And maybe I can chime in, because so, oftentimes I have no idea what people are talking about.
Hank,
when it comes to philosophy.
I think, Hank, you have been on a journey of meaning in the sense that you are interested in trying to find ways that in the secular world, with secular belief systems and worldviews, we can still make meaning together, still take advantage of the benefits of ritual together, still find ways to have the kind of connective tissue parts of religious communities. And then I also think that you're a little bit on a journey of meaning in the sense that you're trying to understand whether or not meaning is something that we entirely make up together, or whether or not there is some larger thing to be derived, some larger sense of meaning to be derived.
Yeah. So from where I sit, humans weren't created, they happened. And so if something was created, it was created for a purpose. If something happened, it just happened. And so it doesn't have an innate reason to be or reason why it was made.
Right.
And that is how I feel. That is what I think about people. This is where evidence has pointed me.
Yeah. This is one of the main disagreements between Hank and me in our worldviews, but it's not super important. Like, I will often say in our conversations, well, we weren't made to, or we weren't made for, and Hank will be like, no, we weren't made to or for anything. Like, that's just the wrong way to think about it, you know? Like, and I'll be like, well, I think we were made to and or for, but it doesn't really matter if the end of the sentence is the same. Like, whether or not there is a, you know, the two or the four is not actually that important to us.
Right. Well, and I think that we evolved to do many particular things.
Right.
Like, you know, our eyebrows exist. It seems people thought for a while it was a sweat thing, but it seems our eyebrows mostly exist to signal how we have facial expressions. So we were made to communicate. We evolved to communicate.
Right.
That's very clear.
Yeah.
You know, our tongues are good at that. Our lips are good at that. Our brains are good at that. So, but I don't think that just because we evolved to do certain things means that those certain things are inherently good or the things that we should be doing.
Right.
I often see people kind of trying to make that argument that if people evolved to do certain behaviors, then those behaviors are the right behaviors and
right.
other behaviors are the wrong behaviors, which
right.
I just think is definitely wrong.
Yeah.
A misunderstanding of things happening. I'm on board now. I understand now. And I am very interested in whether there is I think it's probably all constructed, but I think that you can construct it in really sturdy ways.
Mm-hmm.
So there are sturdy, stable ways of constructing meaning, and there are really janky, tumble-down ways of constructing meaning.
Right.
And I'm interested in sturdy ones.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in whether or not the sturdy ones have something interesting to say about what it is to be a person, and about the value of people specifically, life less specifically, and the universe even less specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is value in an empty universe, in a universe without life. I think that there is value in that just existing. And I think that there is more value in a universe with life. And I think that there is more value in a universe with people. and whatever form those people take, you know, complex multicellular or you know, communicating, knowledge storing,
right,
chemical systems. And I think that there are sturdy ways to build that. And I think the philosophers work and think really a lot about that. But I also sort of like am on my own trying to think through that a lot. And I love doing that. I think it's interesting. And I also like it, the places where it tends to lead me feel good and feel right. And, and also make me feel like we're not like a waste of energy and resources, and you know that the harm that we have done is not met by no good. It is met by an equal or greater amount of good.
Right. So I think just to back up a little bit, when you say you think it's probably all constructed, you mean like all meaning, all sense of like meaning separate from, you know, just as you say, like the value that is in the universe because it is a universe.
I think even the value that is in the universe is constructed. Like I can imagine a universe without life or people.
Right.
And I think that like I imagine that as more valuable than nothing.
Right.
Like that seems right to me.
Right. But that's a construction.
getting
by
to the bottom
you,
of why not, is of course very complicated. But
that's something that you're constructing. Yeah. That's not something that's like quote unquote really real or exists outside of the construction. That
said,
I
don't think
like,
so.
Lots of things that are constructed are real, like tables.
Yeah.
For example. And
all of these words that are coming out of our mouths.
Right, exactly. So like I think this is where we are both really interested is, yes, it is constructed, but so are tables. And are there tables that can be really, really helpful? And what I feel is that there are a lot of worldviews, there are a lot of ways of making meaning that are like having an umbrella when it is like drizzling outside. And the meaning is the umbrella, and you're like, oh, this meaning is very helpful because it is drizzling and I'm not getting wet and I'm not uncomfortable. The problem with a lot of those systems of making meaning that are good umbrellas is that when there is a hurricane, the umbrellas completely stop working and can in fact become counterproductive, right? Like they can like invert themselves, and if you hold on to them too tightly, they can carry you straight away, right? So these things that are helpful worldviews or useful ways of constructing meaning to deal with sort of everyday distractions can really fall apart in the face of the big hard realities. And you and I are both really interested in how to make meaning in community that can hold up to that work in hurricanes, that work in the most difficult things, the most difficult moments that humans go through, that work in the edge cases. And
also that tell you things that you don't, that don't just tell you the thing that you wanted to believe in the first place.
Right. That don't just confirm for you that the way that is most convenient for you to live is the best way to live.
Yeah.
But it challenges you in a loving, non-shameful way, right? Like so much of the time when we're challenged by ethical worldviews, it's done as a way of like shaming us or guilting us or making people feel bad about their humanity. How could you create those challenges from a place of love?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
yeah,
and the fact that like Hank approaches those questions from the perspective of I think humans happened, and I approach those questions from the perspective of I'm not quite so sure that humans just happened is super unimportant. Like it's hard for me to overstate how little I think about that and how little I care about it. What I care about is we find the stuff?
Right. Cause the reality is that like, it doesn't provide any special insight into like, if humans were in some way created, we don't know why.
Right.
Like we don't get special insight into why.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah,
because of that difference.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think that a lot of people, like, their religion provides them what they see as special insight into.
Yes,
why.
No, that's exactly it. That is exactly it. That I don't feel like having that knowledge would provide me with special insight. Whereas I do feel like, for example, like the question of why did the universe come to be continues to be interesting to me, because I feel like it might provide me with special insight that I wouldn't get. Even if you told me, like, even if God appeared to me right now in my basement, well, first off, I would be like, you're standing right in front of the World Cup, God. So you make a better door than a window. If you don't mind stepping a little bit to the left, I'm trying to watch Portugal play Uruguay. And then after I said that, I would be like, I don't know that it would provide me with special insight to know that the God I believe in is really real, because I'm much more interested in, like, what God would want for us or of us if God were really real. So, like, if God told me that, I would be like, oh, that's super helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, it's like, I made all of this, and here's why.
But if God just appeared right now and was like, I am, I would be like, all right, well, that's, I mean, thank you. Can I get some more?
Yeah. How many questions do I get?
Yeah, right. Is this like a genie thing where I can make three wishes? Can I ask three questions? Like, what's the deal? Is this all I get? Is that I am? I am is helpful. It's good, but it's not. I'm not sure that it would give me special knowledge. And I think that's exactly it. That's, you nailed it.
If an omniscient something, like omniscient, omnipowerful something, was like, I can give you three wishes or answer three questions,
oh,
and the three wishes will always be your will come true, and the three questions will definitely be true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure which I'd pick.
Oh,
I think I'd ask three questions.
No, no, not if you thought but about like it for a minute.
Well, if everybody believed me, I guess.
Yeah. If it
came with evidence of some kind.
This reminds me of one of my favorite jokes, but it's like 20 minutes long. I'm not sure if it's worth telling.
Oh, definitely not.
I think it probably is. I agree with you. I should tell it. No. Yeah. Okay. I'm pretty sure that you should say I'd like three wishes, because the first wish could be I would like to end poverty and disease among humans. And that would be good. I feel like you can't ask any question that's going to be as good as ending poverty and disease.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I could also say first wish, I wish to know the answer to these three questions.
But that's good. Yeah. And then God would be like, hey, no pedantic BS. Okay.
Three
questions or three wishes.
We're not
no
playing
cheating.
A fun Taskmaster game, Hank. Yeah. It's interesting. It's an interesting thought anyway.
It is.
Which reminds me that this podcast is brought to you by John in his basement with God. Still watching the World Cup.
Step to the left, please. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by Lipskin. Lipskin, I need to moisturize mine right now because it's been 12 minutes since I last did it.
This podcast is also brought to you by Major, 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 Major.
Yes.
Who is an adult named Major Major, who is also a major.
That's right. And this podcast is brought to you by a universe that contains nothing. A universe that contains nothing. Less valuable, according to Hank, than a universe that contains something, although he realized that that value is constructed inside of his head and not really real. Unless it is really real, which is possible, he's not positive. Is that right? Did I get it?
That's right. You got every bit. Yeah. This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Thrive Market. Thrive is how that's spelled. You may or may not be like me. Here's a thing I know about myself. If I put it in my house, I'm going to eat it fast. in no time flat. And so I like to shop in a way that makes sure that the kinds of foods that are in my home are the kinds of food that should be in my body. You know what helps out with that is having a go-to grocery and household essentials thing that I can, that just like pops up on my phone and it's like, hey, do you want to order your monthly thing? And I'm like, yeah. And then I pick the things that I want in my house and I don't pick the things that I don't want in my house. And the moments when I actually have self-control, which is not when I'm standing in front of the pantry. Thrive Market's super great, whether you're looking for organic kid snacks, low sugar alternatives, or gluten-free pantry essentials, which I absolutely am. And those, the pretzel bites with the peanut butter inside of them, to make my wife so happy. She's like, I can finally have peanut butter pretzels again after developing a gluten allergy. It's fantastic. And as a Thrive Market member, you save money on every single grocery order. On average, you can save over 30% each time. They even have a little deals page that changes like every day, and you can go and see it and see like, maybe I want to try out some new fun thing. They got all kinds of brands on their website. They got Amy's, Banza, Burt's Bees. They got Mike's Hot Honey, Oatly Olipop, Poppy, Salt. When you join Thrive Market, you are also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. You join, they give. Join in on the savings with Thrive Market today and get 30% off your first order plus a free $60 gift. Go to thrivemarket.com/dearhank for 30% off your first order plus a $60 gift. That's Thrive Market, thrivemarket.com/dearhank. And they have told me to say it one final time, even though at this point it seems like a lot, thrivemarket.com/dearhank.
So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank.
We also have a Project for Awesome message to read. It's from Jessica to Hannah. Dear little sister, it's been 4 months since you've left this world. I don't know what to say. It just sucks. I know I'll always hear your voice quoting our favorite shows or laughing at a funny cat video I would have shared with you. I'm so glad the universe picked you to be my partner in crime growing up. I don't know where I would be if I didn't have you to play, laugh, fight, scheme, scream, and navigate the world with. I'll forever cherish the memories. Thank you. I miss you.
Grateful for you, John.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I think that's such a good description to play, laugh, fight, scheme, scream, and navigate the world with. And I'm so, so sorry for your loss, Jessica. Hank, I would like to ask you this question from Calliope, who writes, Dear John and Hank, how long have artichokes been around? I mean, I know they were cultivated at some point, but like from what? Something about them just seems very old. Pumpkins and penguins, Calliope. Now, Hank, I think we should say for our listeners what an artichoke is, or more precisely, what an artichoke was, because I have not seen an artichoke.
They're around.
I mean, when we were kids, our parents would make artichoke dip.
They did make artichokes a lot. I really liked them. I think that's why.
I did not like them, and I still don't.
I loved them.
But I remember you liking them as a kid. And
yeah.
I don't think I've seen an artichoke since childhood. So this is a food product that looks vaguely pineapple-y.
It looks a little like a pineapple.
Like a green pineapple, or a little bit like a sort of succulent that isn't a cactus. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's got spines on the end of the leaves. There's a lot of leaves. It's mostly inedible, but you can eat the bottoms of the leaves.
And
then
heart.
At the end, there is a heart, which is the good part. And you stick it in some melted butter and
I mean,
good.
I wouldn't say so good. And I wouldn't say, good. I would say more along the lines of, okay.
Oh, man, I love it.
All right.
John, I have a very sophisticated palate. Not
you
like you. with your silly little tongue.
Yeah,
that's true. Doesn't know anything.
And my dehydrated lips. Sorry to keep bringing them up, but they're just it's present in my
stupid
life right
lips.
Now. Yeah. Do we know when artichokes began to be cultivated? And more importantly, do we know why? Because it seems to me that, like, looking at that plant, you would never think, like, oh, I bet I can get more calories off this thing than I'm going to put in to try to cultivate it.
Well, as far as how long artichokes have been around 3.7 billion years ago, something started to be alive. And in a very real way,
yeah,
all currently living things are that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So from that perspective, artichokes have been around for about 3.7 billion years, which is the same for you and me and bananas and bacteria.
Well, yes. And by the way, it is very, very weird that all of that life came from life, except at some point, life must have come from non-life. That's weird. That's a weird thing.
It's very weird. It's one of the big ones, that one.
All right. So we're going to make some meaning with that. But more importantly, when did artichokes start being artichokes and not protists?
So there was, they are a kind of thistle. So they're related to thistles, which is wild, which you would never look at a thistle and think, that should be in my mouth. Like they're very dangerous looking plant. And indeed, they are very ancient. They're supposedly one of the world's oldest foods. They were first harvested by people in the Middle East. They became popular in ancient Rome and Greece. And there were sort of like two wild-ish things that, and one of them we don't seem to have anymore. And we think that one is the one that turned into the modern artichoke.
Mm.
And the other one still exists out in the wild. It's called cardoon. And you can still, people did eat it then, and I think still may eat it now. The Pliny the Elder claimed that it could cure baldness, strengthen the stomach, freshen the breath, and increase conception of boys.
Oh.
And there is also, as it was cultivated, it continued to be cultivated in the Middle East. And when it was brought to Europe in the during the Renaissance, apparently it was frowned upon because people thought it was very scandalous for some reason.
Oh.
There was something about it that seemed
it does seem taboo. It is a little scandalous. I mean, there is something sensual about it.
I guess, yeah, depending on how you eat it. But I guess we got over that, and then I ate it a bunch when I was in elementary school for some reason.
Yeah. I mean,
I think that mom was just excited to find a green thing I'd eat.
Yeah, but except that the part that you eat isn't really that green. It's more sort of like whitish, yellowish.
Yeah, no, definitely not actually. No fiber. I don't know how what it's made of, but it tastes like it's made of avocado stuff. Like it's just fatty.
It's
soft, warm.
That's how I would describe it. It's a bit of a crap avocado, and. In 1980s,
maybe that's why there's not any artichokes anymore, because if we got avocados.
In 1980s
like,
Florida,
better.
There literally was no avocado. And so we had to eat artichokes, and now we don't have to because there are avocados.
Yeah.
So people say progress isn't real, but those people did not grow up in Orlando, Florida in the mid-1980s. This next question comes from Tiffany, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, longtime listener of the pod, my partner has just started watching Crash Course in the last month and was wondering what the heck is up with Bernice, or I think Bernice rhymes with furnace. He asked me if it was a reference to something because you guys both managed to weasel references in just about everywhere, and I can't find anything. So who the F is Bernice, not the singer, just her namesake, Tiffany?"
I don't know.
You don't remember? Yeah. Okay.
So, I don't remember.
All right. So— we had an aunt, and she wasn't an aunt. She was our grandmother's cousin, whatever that is.
Yeah. This is sounding familiar.
And her name was Bernice. It was spelled Bernice, but it was spoken Bernice rhymes with furnace. And in fact, when she would introduce herself, she would say, "It's Bernice rhymes with furnace." And she lived in rural Tennessee, and was a fascinating character, a great repository of stories about our grandmother. And that's all I remember about her. I don't remember ever mentioning her in Crash Course, but I might have.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Mom saying Burnus rhymes with furnace a lot.
Yes, I remember that. And then I visited Burnus in Tennessee when I was maybe like 23 years old. It was a great moment.
Oh, wow.
Actually, so and I think I talked about this in the Anthropocene Reviewed book, maybe, but I called. So here's how it went down, Hank. I was in a McDonald's in Tennessee, and I was like, I think we're like relatively close to where this woman, Burnus, lives, who I've always heard stories about, and I do know her last name. And so I looked her up in the phone book, and I called her from the payphone at the McDonald's. And I was like, hey, so I know this is a weird phone call, but I'm Billy Grace's grandson, and I am actually in your town. And there was a long pause, and then she said, so you're saying that you're kin to Billy Grace? And I was like, yeah. And then she said, so you're kin to me? And I was like, yes. And then she said, well, then come on over.
That's like that's the best Burnus story. That sounds so like something Burnus would do, and knowing nothing about her.
And she was like 88 years old, and she made me like pimento cheese sandwiches. And I was like, I'm not hungry. I just came from McDonald's. And she was like, well, you're not leaving this house without eating.
Oh, my God. Grand. I love that. I'm so happy for you.
So as far as I know, that is the only Burnus story I have.
And somehow Burnus made it into Crash Course.
Indeed. Which, I apparently, that was a long time ago. I don't remember everything I said in those videos.
All right, John, what's happening with AFC Wimbledon?
Well, Hank, nothing lasts forever, not even cold November rain, as Guns N' Roses memorably put it. And after an unbeaten win streak of 10 games, AFC Wimbledon finally lost a game while I was not tweeting about them. So it turns out that maybe I wasn't the cause of the win streak.
You only have so much power. Yeah.
AFC Wimbledon lost 2-0 to Chesterfield in the second round of the FA Cup. This is a bummer because if you get to the third round of the FA Cup, you can make a bunch of money. But it's not a bummer in the sense that we weren't going to win the FA Cup anyway. So it's not like we were about to lift a trophy, you know? So it's a bummer because it could have been a big payday, and we do need a big payday. But since we last talked, actually, AFC Wimbledon did win an additional game, which is encouraging. Nice. And, you know, at this point, 19 games into the League Two season, we are solidly mid-table. And when I say solidly mid-table, I mean that our goal difference is zero. So we have scored exactly as many goals as we have given up. And that's not the end of the world. Like, I would love to see us go on a run here. We are only 5 points off the playoff places, but the main thing is to make sure that we stay out of the relegation zone. So I'm reasonably happy with how things are going so far. And, the only other thing that I should mention is that we have a player in the World Cup, which is very exciting, not least because we get paid. The club makes money when you have a player in the World Cup.
For like their time?
Yeah. So Chris Gunter, who is our starting fullback, is one of the backup fullbacks for Wales. So congratulations to AFC Wimbledon's own World Cup player, Chris Gunter.
You're just like anything that makes us a little bit of money.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just
good for us.
Squeak it out dollar by dollar.
Well, at Mars News, great, exciting that the Ingenuity helicopter is still working.
That is great.
And it, in fact, has been working so long that they've had to upgrade it so it can continue to do its job, or to do a new set of jobs that it wasn't originally intended to do. Hmm. It was designed to just fly over smooth terrain because they're just seeing if this could like work.
Right.
But it's continued to exceed expectations. It's been really helpful supporting the rover. Like it can scout ahead and see what's going on, help navigate. But in order to do that, it needed to get some updates so that it could land better. So when it's flying over smooth terrain, it's been pretty straightforward to find level places that don't have a lot of rocks that would damage the helicopter. But those kinds of places are harder to find where the rover is now. So the software upgrade helps the helicopter find safe spots to land using downward-facing camera to detect objects that might pose a risk and steer away from those to find a better landing area. And it also helps Ingenuity process differences between its own movement and the terrain. So Ingenuity was designed for smooth terrain. Any changes in elevation would look to the helicopter like it was it itself was going up or down rather than the ground was coming up and down.
Oh, yeah.
So instead of flying over a hill, it would like correct its course in a way that was not actually correct. So the new software uses digital elevation maps to make the distinction between hills and the helicopter's own movement, making it better able to navigate in its in the places where it is now. So super helpful, doing its job, and doing way more than we ever expected it to. So just doing software updates to Mars for a helicopter.
Just the small matter of updating software on Mars. I love what you just said. Doing its job, trying to be helpful, and doing it as well as it can. Like maybe that's maybe what the little helicopter on Mars is doing is just what we all need to do. The best that we can for as long as we can.
That's right.
We're doing our best.
Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't have to worry about trying to find meaning, just landing spots. So that's great.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, Hank, thank you for podding with me. Thanks to everybody for listening. If you want to email us questions, please do so at hankandjohn@gmail.com. We are so grateful for your questions and for getting to spend this time with you.
We're off to record our Patreon-only podcast, This Week in Stuff. You can find out how to listen to that at patreon.com/dearhankandjohn. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tunametish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Debucky Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.